Welcome to Ad Exchanger Talks, the podcast devoted to examining the issues and trends in advertising and marketing technology that matter most to you.
Does your brand stand out from the crowd? It's hard. That's why hundreds of agencies and marketers build their programmatic and native advertising offering with StackAdapt. Visit StackAdapt.com to learn more. Stay tuned to hear StackAdapt's COO Vitaly Pacherski chat with AdExchanger's Zach Rogers about why native is eating display budgets.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the program. My name is Zach Rogers. I'm the executive editor of AdExchanger. Good to be with you again. 3 years ago, TV broadcaster Cox launched a TV ad exchange called Vidya. It was a time when many video exchanges were being acquired, including like LiveRail and Spot Exchange and Video Plaza and other companies. To lead this division, it promoted an executive from within, Sharita Williams, and I'm pleased to have Sharita here in the studio to talk about Cox and the future of television, other topics. Welcome, Sharita.
Thank you, Zach. Glad to be here.
So, it's a great time to be talking to you because, you know, even as we speak, AT&T is announcing kind of this branding around their vertical, kind of integrated company with cable assets and media assets and technology assets. This is something Cox has been doing for a while. So I think you guys have a historical perspective on that strategy they're implementing. Different scales, but the same idea from my point of view. We'll talk about that, but I think it's certainly a nice time for us to be getting together here and talking. Before we get into that, though, let's have a little bit on you. Where are you from originally?
I'm from Georgia. I'm one of those few people in Atlanta that actually grew up in Georgia, about an hour west. Uh-huh. I grew up on a cattle ranch with 1,000 acres.
Yep. Wow.
Yep.
Is the ranch still operating?
It's not. No.
Oh, okay.
It was kind of my dad's play home. He was a builder in Atlanta and kind of a cowboy at heart.
So okay.
I bought a lot of property out there, And that's where I grew up.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what do you think? What's your kind of local perspective on all the growth in Atlanta?
Oh, I've seen it change so much. I mean, it started with the Olympics. It really went from being a small town that was considered a capital to now it really is more of a big city, great restaurants, Lots of exciting things happening inside the city itself with the Beltline. It's like a rails to trails type thing that's happened and connected all the neighborhoods. So Atlanta is a super cool place to be right now.
Right. Cool. Yeah. Where did you go to college?
I went to MIT. So mm-hmm. Massachusetts Institute of Technology, double E degree, electrical engineering. I did engineering internships while I was there, but I ended mm-hmm. up going into investment banking afterwards. So got a lot of kind of finance and strategy.
Did you do any finance in college?
I did a minor in economics or concentration in economics. Okay. So business was always sort of my side thing. And honestly, at a lot of my engineering internships, I ended up wanting to understand how the products were sold and marketed and more of the business side of it, not just the technical design. So mm-hmm. I kind of knew I probably wasn't going to be an actual engineer as much as kind of using all that problem solving and technical background to help me on the business side of things, which mm-hmm. is what I've done.
And how did you end up moving from finance into media and tech?
So when I left investment banking in New York, I wanted to get back to Atlanta. And I knew about Cox from having grown up there. I knew it was a great private media company. Mm-hmm. And I actually targeted that company for roles and, you know, managed to land one as my first job going back to Atlanta in 98. And it was in what was called at the time New Media Development, but it was really kind of a corporate venture arm within Cox that was focused on the first wave of the internet growth back in 98.
Okay.
And it was a great opportunity. I got to meet all the division heads and sort of the operating units of Cox. We own, you know, Cox Automotive, we own Cox Cable, Cox Media Group. So all those companies, I got like weekly engagement at the senior level, but focused on the newer areas, which at the time was the internet and digital, and what does this all mean for traditional media companies? Mm-hmm. So that sort of began my transition from purely finance and technology in terms of my studies to more media and internet and digital and all the things that I've worked on since then.
Okay, got it. If you wouldn't mind, let's break out each of those divisions at Cox and just to make sure the audience understands what Cox owns before
sure.
we talk about video. What's Cox Auto?
So Cox Auto it started out as Manheim Auto Auctions, which is mm-hmm. the largest auto auction company in the world. They touch, you know, 90%+ of all used cars in the U.S. It's a massive operation. It's also global, I think. And then it's Kelley Blue Book and Auto Trader and V Auto and a lot of other companies that we've acquired over time to be what is now a pretty significant player in the automotive software space. From everything that helps to power the dealerships all the way through selling the cars and marketing the cars online.
It's a huge amount of like auto and tender data.
It is.
As well.
Yes. And they're doing a great job at leveraging that full value chain that they touch.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Cox Cable.
So Cox Cable is one of the largest MVPDs in the company in the country, similar to Comcast and other large players in that space. They're the ones that put the physical wire in your home for cable and, you know, video, internet. Lots of different products have evolved from that over time, but they're the fourth or fifth largest player on that side, privately owned, millions of subs across the country.
Okay. And then, you know, when we think about cable companies, they've taken a greater interest in the advertising space, access companies in general, both cable and telco, and using their, owning the pipe, ownership of the pipes as a data asset, essentially, identity, whether that's just like identifying a person, a user, linking that to an addressable ID, or actually mining some of the deeper, more sensitive data around behavioral and location and stuff. Does Cox have any, is there any activity around activating that cable data set in the digital media environment?
I would describe Cox as the most conservative of the MVPDs in terms of how we leverage user data. We are a private company. We are conservative by nature, I think, in terms of how we maintain that trust with the consumers and the customers. So there hasn't been a ton of that. I will say that we've done a lot to try and be innovative in terms of leveraging that access into the home, into new ways to, you know, engage with customers in a way that is transparent. So Cox Cable was the very first MVPD to partner with Google when they came into the programmatic TV space. They launched programmatic TV with Google, you know, many years ago. Mm-hmm. And it was really just kind of early trial and error of how do we make this thing that's worked so well in digital in terms of programmatic, how do we use that to make buying TV at the local level more efficient as well? Mm-hmm. And there were a ton of learnings that came out of that. And that was part of the impetus that led to us starting video within Cox and knowing that there was a real opportunity there.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I'm dying to ask a follow-up on that, but I want to keep moving and talk about the Cox Media side. And we may come back to partnering with a company like Google versus building capabilities in-house. I think that's an interesting question.
Okay.
But what's Cox Media?
So Cox Media Group is the oldest part of Cox. It's a 118-year-old media company that started in Dayton, Ohio with a newspaper and has continued to innovate into media as each new media came along. So newspaper, radio, TV, cable, digital media. Today it is two major newspapers, 14 TV stations, and about 80 radio stations around the country, as well as a unit that Vidya is a part of called National Ad Platforms, which includes Vidya, an automated sales platform for national advertisers to local TV stations, as well as Gamut, which is kind of an OTT ad exchange play that Cox owns, and Cox Reps, which is the largest traditional national ad rep firm in the country. They touch about 60 or 70% of the spot TV marketplace.
Okay, great. Thank you for the overview. Now, this is a sector that's changing very fast. As we were talking before we went on mic here, there have been big tectonic shifts in the media and telco space. And here you have a very long-standing, privately held company. Does it feel stable? Of course, you know, you're on mic speaking publicly. You're not going to tell me what you might have heard about the owner's willingness to sell or merge. But what can you say about a company like Cox and its durability in the face of, like, just very tumultuous kind of M&A activity?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been said publicly that Cox is seeking a partner on the TV side of things to help leverage scale in the marketplace. I think the company has come to the conclusion that a lot of other companies in broadcasting have concluded, which is scale matters a lot because you're no longer competing. One station in a market is no longer just competing with the other stations in the market. It's really broadcast owners competing with not only other broadcasters, but cable networks, internet behemoths like Facebook and Google, and everyone else that's coming in for those ad dollars in their local markets. So having kind of national scale, you know, 35% of the country or more is very important, you know, for your relationship with your network, whether it's ABC, NBC, Fox, whomever. It's important when you're dealing with programming rights. It's important when you're dealing with MVPD retrans rights. It's important on a lot of different parts of the broadcaster's financial well-being. So I think for that reason, we are looking for a partner to get bigger on the TV side.
Okay.
And, you know, that's, I think, a healthy place for us to be. We're not, you know, in a position of desperation where we're, the market has sort of, you know, hurt us and now we're looking to get out. It's really, we're still very, very strong and we have super attractive properties and we're proactively seeking the right partner to be bigger and continue to grow.
So. Yeah, right. There are benefits of scale that are increasingly necessary to compete, I would think.
So. Absolutely.
Okay, so let's talk about Vidya a little bit. What's the origin story there?
So Vidya is really one of those opportunities that it's sort of incubated inside of a traditional media company where I'm sitting in a strategy role at Cox Media Group and my co-founder, Brad Smith, was chief operating officer for Cox Reps at the time, the national ad rep firm that I mentioned before. And Brad's in his role trying to figure out ways that he can make that business more efficient, but you can only do so much because that business fundamentally sits between a bunch of national ad buyers and a bunch of local TV stations, all of which are disconnected. Mm-hmm. And so really for him to make that business more efficient, he needs a platform that reaches outside the walls of that business to do business more efficiently. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting in my role at Cox Media Group, head of strategy, seeing the shifts that are happening online with programmatic. And I see that as the solution for making the rep business or helping the rep business to evolve. Mm-hmm. So we put our heads together in the beginning of 2014 and convinced Cox that programmatic was both a threat if we didn't go into this space because someone was going to do it, but also a pretty big opportunity if we can find a way to move that business that we'd been in for 40 years in kind of a handcrafted fashion into more of a supply-side platform type model where, you know, you can aggregate the inventory at scale, you can apply new data sets, let people sell in ways that they've never sold before and let them sell to customers they've never sold to before. And so all of that, we thought, meant a more sustainable model for the national broadcast side of the ledger.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So yeah, TV ad sales has always been super manual.
Yes.
And so was the opportunity largely efficiencies from automation?
That is part of it. I think automation is a big part of it, but we kind of see that as ground table stakes or sort of the foundation of this change that has to happen. You know, I don't see programmatic or automation as an end in itself. I see it as a means to an end. And the end is really omnichannel marketing, right? It's helping marketers put the right ad in front of the right person at the right time. And you can only do that with automation and data. And so TV still has a very enviable position in terms of scale and local audiences and engagement. I mean, it's as high as any medium, but it needs to be competitive on the marketing side of the house in terms of, you know, being more real time, being more measured, being more targeted, being more accountable. And so that's what, you know, I think the players that we compete with and Vidya in particular, that's really the vision that we're marching towards.
Okay. And before Vidya, was Cox Reps representing more than just the Cox television stations?
Yes, like, absolutely. They have a lot of the same clients that we do. We've been very successful at penetrating their customer base. So we have Cox, of course, with their 14 TV stations, but we have 500 stations live today on the platform. Cox reps about 300 of those.
Okay.
It's groups like Cox, Graham, Raycom, Hearst, Tegna, Scripps, Gray Television, I'm probably forgetting someone, but yeah, mm-hmm. there's a lot of the large local broadcasters that are in the space.
Talk a little bit about the inventory. When you're repping this broadcast inventory, what is this inventory?
So Vidya doesn't rep the inventory. We're really a sales platform.
Cox historically does. Cox Reps does. And then, yeah.
So the rep model, if that is the question, is...
No, my question is about Vidya.
So for Vidya, we enable sales, more automated sales to both their quote-unquote national inventory and their local inventory. The difference being the seller, right? They have local AEs that sell the TV ads on a given TV station to advertisers in that local DMA, and that's local broadcast. And they also have a rep firm, Cox Reps, Katz, could be internal, where those sellers are out meeting with buyers at national TV agencies and mm-hmm. putting ads on those local TV stations. Mm-hmm. So for both those flows of business, both those sales channels, we can automate that process.
Okay, great. Talk a little bit about your data, the data that you enable and the data that you're able to apply from internally.
Yeah. So, you know, the hardest part of the problem that we're solving, and I don't think we knew this going into it, but we've certainly figured it out along the way, is mm-hmm. the data that TV stations use to manage their inventory at the local TV station mm-hmm. is completely non-standardized. There's yep. no standardization from station to station, even within TV groups themselves. Mm-hmm. And so really, we're in the business of aggregating all of this non-standardized inventory
okay.
into a marketplace that buyers can then search against across a variety of different buying systems. Mm-hmm. So on the station side, we've done a really good job of making sure that we can talk to whatever existing traffic data they have, whatever existing ad inventory systems they use to manage their sales process. So we've integrated with lots of different systems on that side to aggregate and standardize that data. And then similarly on the agency side, we've tied into Mediaocean and Strata, which are the two largest buying systems at TV agencies for traditional TV.
Oh my God, it sounds like such a headache.
It's been hard because of the lack of standardization, and it's also hard because, you know, broadcaster's strength really is in the variation, right? You don't want to come in and say everyone has to do sales exactly this way because you yeah. make it more difficult for them to compete with each other in their local markets.
Okay.
You want to allow them to position their inventory in unique sales strategies while also being able to aggregate it up and let a buyer buy easily. And so, you know, it's... You know, doing that in a way that doesn't hurt the existing business but helps it over the long haul, that's really the approach that we've taken that I think has really resonated with folks.
How do you move the needle on standards?
Well, we've been a big supporter from the beginning of an initiative called TIP. It's the mm-hmm. Television Interface Protocol and I might not be saying that right, but it's backed mm-hmm. by TVB and several of the largest broadcasters, Nexstar, Sinclair, Tegna, mm-hmm. Tribune. And it's the first attempt for broadcasters to come together and say, you know, this automation is a good thing, and we all mm-hmm. want this to happen more quickly. And in order for that to occur, we need for the systems, the different vendors that are in the space already, we need them to adhere to some agreed upon standards that make this interoperability a lot quicker, right? Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. you know, Wide Orbit's one of the biggest traffic vendors in the space. OSI is also a big traffic vendor in the space. Strata is one of the big buying systems. Mediaocean's one of the big buying systems. Platforms like ours, ITN, you know, Wide Orbit has a platform as well. All of us are engaged in a process to make sure that whether a broadcaster chooses to do business through us or anyone else, all the different pieces of the ecosystem can share data across them in a way that is efficient. And it's still early, I think, in the process of working through those standards, but we've made a lot of progress in a short period of time. And, you know, there's lots of upside for everyone if we can make that happen.
That helps.
It does. It's huge.
If people know they're leaving money on the table.
It's huge. I mean, and it's not just about broadcast, right? I mean, ultimately, advertisers want to be able to put messages across all of the pieces of their marketing
yeah.
budget, right? And so making broadcast easier to buy, making it more data-driven, making it quicker and more real-time mm-hmm. just allows it to be on a level playing field with things like OTT and digital and VOD and all the other options that are in the marketplace for video.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. We're going to pause for a quick moment, hear from a sponsor. I'll be right back with Sherita Williams. I'm here with Vitaly Pacherski, co-founder and COO of our sponsor, StackAdapt. Vitaly, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us, what is StackAdapt?
So StackAdapt is a pioneer in programmatic native advertising. So we're one of the first companies that coined the term programmatic native, basically blending a channel for distribution of content and merged it with real-time bidding technology. And now we operate as a demand-side platform, primarily powering agencies and brands with a content-driven advertising.
All right, great. And what's your customer use case?
Yeah, so primarily we support agencies in about 80% of the cases, and the remaining 20% are brands directly who have internal teams to operate software like ours. Nowadays, we see more and more agencies starting to build out their media offering. So we see a lot of agencies who historically have been social agencies or digital or content marketing agencies starting to build out these programmatic and media teams. And they naturally gravitate to this low frequency type of software like StackAdapt.
Okay, great. And what's on your product roadmap?
So historically, we've been really focused on automation and machine learning. So we've always seen StackAdapt as just being a platform that you can turn on to drive more customers or distribute content. Now we're trying to break walls, as we call them, and just offer more flexibility from customers to operate our software. So things like bid factoring, dynamic creative optimization, PMP marketplaces, finding that blend between automation and control from the teams that operate the software.
All right, super. Thanks for your support.
Thanks.
And I'm back with Sharita Williams from Vidya. Sharita, could you speak a little bit to the competitive set as you view it? Like, who are you selling against?
Yeah, on the local broadcast side or national, local, however you look at it, it's really sort of three players at this point, I think. It's us, Wide Orbit, and a company called ITN. All of us have gotten into the space with some foothold in the traditional spot TV marketplace. With Wide Orbit, their foothold is the traffic system at many of the TV stations across the country. With ITN, they had an existing business that was an unwired network where they'd go and buy unsold inventory from local TV stations and sell it to a network buyer at the national side. And with us, our traditional foothold really was that rep firm that I mentioned earlier, where you know, we really have a deep understanding of the sales process on the national side of local TV. And it really positioned us well to be able to fix the parts of the process that were high friction and low value and keep the pieces that really enable broadcasters to get a good yield on their inventory. And that matters a lot because, you know, in digital, a lot of the programmatic models were RTB, real-time bidding. Mm-hmm. And that's a great model if you have way more demand than you do, or way more supply than you do demand. Mm-hmm. Local TV is the opposite. They have a scarcity problem. So it's all about yield. It is a, you know, the majority of the model is sold on a forward basis. So quarters and quarters in advance, most of that inventory is booked. And so we knew those things going into it, and we built our platform and our products and services to account for the way business is done today.
Okay.
But enabling, you know, more data-driven, more speed and transparency and all the things that come along with doing business through platforms.
Right. So the legacy systems supporting television advertising are, they're buoyed or held up by sort of the futures and forward nature of TV ad buying, I think. I mean, you have, if there's less incentive for them to change if there's never any softness in their sales.
I think that's right. I think most market players are reluctant to embrace widespread change before they feel any pain, right?
Right.
So TV's still a very healthy business. They've got multiple lines of revenue and they're all, you know, relatively stable. So yeah, it hasn't been one of those where the house is burning. And so, you know, it's easy to come in and kind of offer someone water. But I do think that the broadcasters have lived through what happened with newspapers and the shift that happened from newspapers to digital. Many of them owned newspapers, so they saw it firsthand.
Cox has seen it up close.
Yes, absolutely. And it's also a case where a lot of these broadcasters have OTT footprints now. They have VOD inventory. Mm-hmm. They have digital video assets that are significant. And so they themselves are looking for a solution that lets them manage their sales process across all those different impressions. And they know the marketer is looking for the other side of that as well. So there is receptivity there. You know, I think the hardest thing about, you know, attacking this space and really trying to build a winning business here is really just the normal chicken and the egg problem of any marketplace. You know, you go to the broadcasters and they say, well, bring me the dollars and I'll lean in. And you go to the agencies and they say, well, if you had the inventory, then I would buy that way. And so someone has to go first. And we've had some great success. As I said, we have 500 stations live now. When we take a station live, we have access to their entire schedule of inventory. It's not the leftovers. So you can buy Super Bowl, you can buy Emmys, you can buy, you know, prime time, 5 quarters into the future. So the same thing you could buy if you call that station directly, you can access through our inventory, through our platform in seconds. Mm-hmm. So we've made real progress in getting the supply side to lean in and sort of jumpstart this marketplace. And the buy side has now done enough testing and enough participation to where they see the value to their side of the business in having this inventory online and being able to buy it in new ways. And so now I feel like the momentum is shifting to the agency side in terms of agencies making real commitments to this way of buying.
Okay.
And, you know, going into 2019, I don't know if you know, but a lot of the spot TV business is booked in the fall for the following year. They call it annuals. Mm-hmm. A lot of that annual business that's coming down for 2019 is being booked over platforms like ours. So the shift is finally starting to happen, and we can see it because it's happening right now.
Okay. And from a buy, a couple of questions on the buy side. One is, from a services point of view, sounds like there's a real clear, deliberate strategy change happening there. Where is it coming from specifically? Are there agency holding group executives who are making top-down type of decisions about their organizations?
Yes.
Or is it more grassroots and coming from little agencies? Or
it's the big guys from our perspective. I think there are some little guys that are participating as well because, you know, they're already pretty well-versed in digital. A lot of the smaller agencies are the bigger players in digital.
Okay.
But the holding companies and their TV buying groups in particular are the ones that are in the midst of a pretty big transition to a new way of doing business. Mm-hmm. And it starts with, you know, the folks at the head of the agency, but it's also the heads of the spot TV buying groups. And in terms of the change management piece of this, which is a big piece of making this all happen because there's so many people that touch this business on all sides of the table, mm-hmm. that change management in terms of bringing the buyers along and helping them understand their workflow and the new model versus the old way of doing things. That's been a huge part of this process as well. Mm-hmm. Even though they're not the decision maker, getting them bought in and happy with the new tools is a big part of the change that is occurring.
Mm, okay. And now a question on buy-side technology. Mm-hmm. You referenced Strata and MediaOcean. It felt like the old school of TV buying.
Yeah.
But what about video and TV centric DSPs? Mm-hmm. Do you see a lot of demand flowing in through those types of software?
I haven't seen a ton
providers?
Of demand yet. Okay. I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I think all of the supply side players like ourselves are not quite at network scale yet. And a lot of those DSPs think more like a network. They want to buy, you know, X number of impressions across the country. There's not many of them that are focused on targeting specific local stations for their customers. So having a spotty footprint or having a lot of depth in certain markets doesn't help them as much as having, you know, a broad footprint across the whole country. Mm-hmm. And I think we're pretty close to that. I think other players are getting there too. And I think we'll see a lot more action from the DSPs once that's in place. Having said that, there's a ton of folks testing and sort of figuring out TV, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. You know, Google, DataXu, VideoAmp, TubeMogul, Trade Desk, these are all folks that, Videology, these are all folks that we've done some level of conversations or testing with in the past and have ongoing initiatives around to ramp up as we continue to grow. So I think there is a ton of interest. I think that it will happen, but it's not quite there yet in terms of the bulk of the demand.
Okay, great. So with digital, there's obviously been a lot of issues around trust and transparency that have risen up.
Mm-hmm.
Fraudulent inventory and non-viewable impressions. And then the middle supply chain players engaging in all kinds of funny stuff with the programmatic auction.
Yeah.
Which has sort of increased their margins, but in a non-transparent way with their customers and partners.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious if you see anything similar to that looming on the horizon for television as digital delivery of ads becomes more prominent. Do you see?
I don't think that model will work for TV. I think TV, the content itself is so expensive to produce that broadcasters can't afford to have an arbitrage model where, you know, half their margins are sucked out by middle players.
Mm-hmm.
They've been very adamant about the types of incremental cost of sale that they will tolerate versus what they, you know, won't tolerate. And the digital model is not what's being applied to TV, and nor should it be. I mean, the scale is so much greater.
Mm-hmm.
The players that are involved, I think, will be far fewer than the ones that were in digital. That I just don't think it will be the same kind of digital tax that we've seen in programmatic.
All right, interesting, great. Programmatic television. When you hear that phrase, what comes to mind?
It's automation and data. I mean, it's at its best, it's going to be you sitting in your house watching your big screen TV and seeing a different ad than, you know, your spouse or kid in another room in the house from that same provider. That at mm-hmm. its best, it's very targeted, relevant messaging on the big screen, you know, laid back environment of TV. Mm-hmm. But today, you know, it's far from that. You mm-hmm. got little pieces of that depending on which part of the TV ecosystem you're talking about. There is true addressability for some MVPD inventory that's out there.
Yep.
In broadcast, that is not true. There's no true household even addressability for mm-hmm. Broadcast other than, you know, some small trials that are going on here and there. Mm-hmm. So there's a new standard for broadcasting called ATSC 3.0 that has mm-hmm. been approved and that's being rolled out. That will give broadcasters this ability to do kind of one-to-one messaging directly to your smart TV. Mm-hmm. But until that's in place, you know, most of what we're doing and what other players in the programmatic TV space are doing for broadcast is more kind of index-based targeting. Mm-hmm. They're putting ads to your household that over-index for a certain brand, right? They know that you're more likely to be an Audi driver, and so they're putting that Audi ad in front of you and other homes in that area. But it's not true one-to-one targeting, which is, you know, I think the long-term play for at least mm-hmm. a piece of the pie. I don't think addressability is great if you're talking about lower parts of the funnel. I think if you're talking about branding and the upper parts of the funnel, you know, a lot of the kind of broad-based reach campaigns that TV is known for will continue to exist for a really long time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got it. So earlier you made a reference to like Cox's engagement with Google mm-hmm. on ad monetization for television inventory. And then later an in-house effort to create the same value. Mm-hmm. I'm curious if you think there's a risk for the television industry in outsourcing technology to a handful of large platforms, the way that many digital publishers have done.
Do
broadcasters need to be very conscientious, from your point of view, about having an internal technology capability, relying on themselves?
I would phrase it as they need to be very conscientious about having tools and technology that work for them. Whether they need to own it or not, I think is dependent on sort of, you know, where you think the value is in the value chain. But they certainly need to make sure that there's a piece of the tech stack that works for the broadcaster's needs, maximizing yield, not necessarily maximizing ROI, you know, making their sales costs more efficient, not necessarily making the buyer's side of things more efficient. And that is where I think there's still a lack of understanding in the space in terms of, you know, in digital, it was very clear. You had DSPs, you know, demand-side platforms, you had SSPs, supply-side platforms, and you had the DMPs in the middle that were kind of Switzerland for the data. In programmatic TV, there's a lot of kind of one-size-fits-all approaches where people are trying to solve problems for both sides. And what it means is that you're not really solving for either side, right? It's kind of this, you know, no one's happy, but a deal got done model. And the buy side is starting to figure that out. And they're starting to get real tools and technology for the agency side that do kind of arm them and give them true ROI and efficiency gains on their side. I don't know that the supply side quite understands that yet. And so they see some of these players that are emerging on the buy side as equivalent to folks like us that serve their needs, and they're not. Mm. So I just think you got to have a real understanding of what does the technology do for you, and make sure that the choices that you're making in terms of who you partner with and who you enable with your inventory really do solve for your needs. Mm-hmm. And to me, it doesn't matter as much if they own it, as long as the business model works for them. But you know, mm-hmm. I say that selfishly as a provider. But we're happy to talk about, you know, whatever level of ownership people want to talk about too. So.
Right, of course. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. But wonderful conversation. Thank you so much for coming into the studio.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And thank you, listener, for tuning in to yet another episode of Ad Exchanger Talks. We'll see you next week.
Next week, tune in to hear more from StackAdapt, the number one and only programmatic native advertising platform with engagement-based pricing, award-winning customer service, and no minimums. Produced by Bigfoot Music and Sound in New York City.